Ron and Anian.
I started it the other day, and it's got this noise in the engine. And I just want you to check it out because I know you'll give me the straight answer, which I don't understand the logic of this, where I wouldn't give him straight answers before, but now that I'm about to give him the death sentence, now it's okay. Now I can tell him it's a piece of junk.
And it's a hot one, like 7 inches from the midday sun. Well, I hear you whispering the words to melt everyone, but you stay so cool.
The car doctor.
I finally went out and got myself a scanner of some sort. It gave me live stream data. It gave me fault codes. It gave me mode 6. And I said, oh, it's cylinder 4. The misfire moved to the cylinder I swapped the coil on. And I said, well, I know it's the coil.
Look at you fixing cars.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now,
what's happening, hot stuff?
Here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Hello and welcome. Ron and Andy, the car doctor here at 855-560-9900. Here's the second hour of car doctor this week. Isn't this exciting to be here in this nice, warm, hot day? It is hot out there. And by the way, Mark on Facebook reminds me to tell everybody that a clean engine runs cooler. And he's got a good point. So if your engine is laboring under a pile of grease and oil, and you know, it's a good time to fix those seals and leaky gaskets and, you know, make an older engine run cooler and last longer and do a little bit of maintenance to it, as well as just clean it or keep it clean in general. Always a good idea. And, you know, we should point out, and I if you don't know this by now, let's just reference it one time, in that, you know, you're driving along the road and the engine overheats and there's steam coming out from under the hood. Don't open the hood. You already know it's overheated. You already know it's broken. All right? Don't be stupid. Okay? Give it a half hour. Give it 45 minutes. All right? Because trust me, and this is, you know, for those of you that have the ego, I can fix anything, don't lift the hood, because you're going to lift the hood thinking you can fix anything, and the hose is going to explode in your face and give you a third degree burn. So just let the car sit there. Sit in the car. Put the windows down if you can. And call for roadside. Call AAA, call roadside service, whatever you got to do. But please, don't open the hood. This is nothing to fool around with. It's boiling hot in most parts of the country today and for the next couple of days from what I hear. And, you know, let's be safe. Common sense. Let's show the world we got some smarts, eh? Which might be a trick unto itself. So, you know, I still think the gene pool is contaminated, but that's another story. Let's get on over. I was going to talk a little bit about this Camry that I fixed this week, which is a great story. But, you know, Frank's been waiting there a good long time. Frank in New Mexico. Hey, Frank, how hot is it in New Mexico today? I can't wait to hear this. 72 degrees.
Oh, it's going
to
be another 100. It's been for the last 3 days.
Yeah, but you see now.
Hot and dry.
Yeah, right. See, you've got hot and dry. I just walked down the end of the driveway to get the mail here at the studio, which is about 7 steps, and it felt like 70. I was soaking wet by the time I got back. It's probably 95% humidity. The next step here in the Northeast is, it's either this or rain. There's no difference. So, you know, it's just hot and miserable out. How can I help you today, kiddo?
Oh, simple question. My old tank, my 86 Olds Cutlass Supreme, you know, 5.0. Does that thing have an actual mass airflow sensor? I can't find it.
This is
anywhere in the intake.
This is a rear wheel. This is a rear wheel drive.
Yes, sir. Rear wheel drive.
5 liter
V8.
5 liter V8 carbureted, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. The only way this has a mass airflow sensor is if someone dropped one in the trunk, but there isn't one on the engine. Yeah. No,
yeah, I've been looking for it. Can't find it.
Nope.
Factory manual doesn't even refer to it, and
nope.
I was just curious. I guess it doesn't have one. I won't look for it anymore.
Some of the confusion, well, you can keep looking for it, but it won't be there. You know, some of the confusion comes about because in 86, they made a rear-wheel drive Cutlass and a front-wheel drive Cutlass. And on the front-wheel drive Cutlass, there was a mass airflow sensor.
That was a smaller engine, though, wasn't
right.
it?
Right. That was the 3.8, correct. That was also the ones with the PCMs that would have cold solder board problems. 7727, 7728, 7729, and 7730. I remember those. The last four digits of the PCM, they would have cold solder joint problems. The cars wouldn't run right when they were cold, and you could diagnose it by simply pulling it down behind the kick panel and flat palming it, and the car would stall, and you'd go, that's bad. Cars have changed a little bit in the last 35 years. So, but yes, sir.
Yeah,
no,
okay. Well, that's no, all mess, I was just stumped.
Yeah, no, not there. So, but you keep looking for it if you want, Frank.
No. One other question. Yeah. I've been, as far as at the base of the carburetor, the little vacuum outlets or inlets.
Okay.
I need to split one off to go over to the MAP sensor. And I did it using a little T.
Right.
Called up a couple of weird codes, and I thought, okay, maybe the MAP sensor is bad. Okay, I got the part, haven't changed it yet. But as far as splitting into T's and down there with a vacuum, should I match size per size?
It would be nice if you could, but why are you changing the vacuum line to the MAP sensor?
No, I was just trying to find a way to tie it in correctly to the vacuum at the base of the carburetor.
Well,
I wanted to see emissions failure indicated, MAP sensor failure, so... But found that it wasn't even connected.
Well, okay. Right. So, but my question is, why are you having to...
As far as the vacuum, I mean, the electrical was connected.
Yeah, but why are you splitting anything? What happened to the original vacuum line?
You mean at the base of the carb or from the MAP sensor?
From the MAP sensor itself.
It's still there.
Okay.
I still have the line there. I'm just trying to figure out the best way to tie in at the base of the carb to get the correct vacuum.
Yeah, wait.
I was trying to match size per size, but I wasn't sure. I couldn't find the old T. So
well,
I had to make something up on my own, you know. And
right,
I don't think I've done it right.
But that's what I'm asking. What happened to the factory routing of the vacuum line? Of the MAP line? Where did that go?
I don't know. But, We've had the car since new. I just noticed after we, a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, we had to change the carb out and got an exact replacement. It's just like the one that came out of the car. But the routing, as far as I know, when I got it back from the mechanic, the MAP sensor line was just wrapped around the MAP sensor there, and it wasn't hooked up at the base of the carb. So I figured the guy lost the T's or something. So I was just figuring out how to tie back in properly.
So, in other words, they gave you the wrong carburetor.
No. The carburetor is correct. It's exact.
Well,
but
it can't be exact if the fitting for the MAP sensor is not there.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, but the little outlets or inlets at the base of the carb are exactly like the one... the original I took out, because I took pictures of the old one, and those little pipes that come out, they're exactly the same as on the new one as on the old one. The carb is exact.
Right. My point is the factory vacuum line has to go somewhere. So did it go to the base of the carburetor, or did it go to...
Yes, even the diagram on the underside of the hood shows it going to the base of the carb.
Okay. So,
but somehow the correct little T got lost, and I rigged one up, but
okay.
I thought maybe I'm not doing this right. I need to match size per size.
Well, I don't know that you need to match size per size, but it will need a vacuum line. Last question. The connector at the MAP sensor is green, correct?
Yeah, I believe so. It's
three little
terminals.
Right, and it's got a solid green connector.
Yes, sir.
Right. Okay. Then you're on the MAP sensor, but where that vacuum fitting went, although I could think of a few places it went, it probably disappeared into the twilight zone or something. but yeah, it's funny, and there it is. See? Now Frank, if you jump into this music, maybe you'll find your vacuum tea, brother. Listen. Try and match where it goes exact. Don't just assume, especially if it's an all-original car. Perhaps if you find where it originally went, then you'll know, did you get rid of the old carburetor, by the way?
Yes, after I took extensive pictures. And the line currently goes right, it reaches perfectly to the T I was trying to hook into as far as lengthwise.
Okay.
Right, it's the vacuum on the at the base of the carb on the passenger side.
Just remember, you want to have manifold vacuum. This should be full vacuum at idle. If you're on the correct vacuum line, a MAP sensor needs manifold absolute pressure. Manifold, that's why it's a MAP sensor. You want manifold vacuum going up to that sensor. All right, but get yourself a diagram, Frank. See where it goes. Maybe you can dig up some pictures. I'll look around the shop. If I come up with something, I think I've got your email somewhere. I'll shoot it out to you. But just make sure how you hook that up. Maybe reference some of your older pictures. Maybe you'll find it that way. But by all means, it's got to go to the right spot. Size isn't that important, but it would a little bit of a degree. But more important that it goes to a manifold source, not ported vacuum, which is entirely different. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the car doctor, coming back right after this.
What's more fun than listening to Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor and getting that car fixed right? 855-560-9900. Give Ron a call. Now, back to Ron.
Let's head over to Brian in the land of cheesesteaks, Philadelphia. I could go for a good Philly cheesesteak right about now. It's the home inning stretch. Brian, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
You're making me very hungry when you talk about cheesesteaks.
You know, I'll tell you, it's... And you could look at every different part of the country, and every part of the country just makes something so good. It's just, I love.
Well, whenever somebody comes in, I know that's the first thing they want. So I gotta, gotta make sure I hook them up and get them a cheesesteak.
Right.
And I eat about one a month. That's about it because they're too addictive.
It's a good addiction. So it's if someone really wants to impress me with technology, I think they should invent the pill that you can eat as much as you want and never gain any weight. Now we're talking, because there's a lot of things I'd like to do. How can I help you today, Brian?
So here's the thing. I have a 2017 Ford Fusion.
Right.
I follow the manual, the maintenance guide, pretty much to a T. Now, with oil changes, it gives you the interval. It ranges from like 3750 to 7500, depending on your driving. But also, there's an oil life monitor giving you certain percentages of oil life. And I've never really gone by that because I don't know if I can really trust it because I've always gone by miles.
Right.
But I know this thing is there, and I wanted to get your opinion about using that and the accuracy of the oil life percentage monitor.
I'm not an oil life monitor guy. It's a guideline to me. To me, it's not necessarily something I want to rely on. I still think common sense prevails. How many miles do you drive in a year?
About 15,000.
Okay, and what engine is this? The 2 liter?
2.7.
2.5.
I'm sorry, 2.5.
2.5.
2.5.
Okay. So you're doing 15,000 miles a year. How many oil changes are you doing a year right now?
Well, let me see. I change about around 5,000, around 5,300.
Yeah.
So it's about maybe 3 a year, I would imagine.
So here's,
if I did my math correctly.
Here's the other end of that question, right? How often do you want to buy a new car?
Oh, I keep the car, I keep it as long as it's mechanically viable.
Okay.
I keep them as long as possible.
I
usually keep a car till usually keep it, at least to 100,000 miles.
Okay.
And it's paid off, so I don't like car payments. I like to maintain a car well and keep it going as long as possible.
Then I think what you're doing is absolutely correct. I think the car that gets, if we think about it, so they'll probably tell you to change the oil every 7,000 to 8,000 miles. So now you'll do it twice a year.
Far.
Yeah, so you would end up doing it twice a year instead of three times a year. Okay?
Yeah.
A couple of problems. A couple of problems with that, right? So it's okay now while the car is young. Listen, when you were a teenager, right, you could go out and howl at the moon all night, 17, 18, 19, 20. I bet you can't do that now, right?
Not at 52.
too many cheesesteaks and too much else going on, right? So,
that adds up.
You tend to take a little better care of yourself. Car's no different, brother. All right? And as that car ages, it's just a matter of watching it age and the money you spend is an extra oil change a year. So you don't go to Starbucks three times in a month, and you're even, all right? So you don't have to buy your $8 cup of coffee and whatever else you get when you go there. And that's kind of how I see it. I think an oil change is so much more than an oil change if it's done properly. It's a road test.
And it's not that expensive.
No.
I mean, I have a guy who does it for like $25. So it's not even about the money, because this guy, he's an oil lube place. He's a private guy. I've known him for 27 years. And, you know, I go to him. It's not that expensive. And I used to do it myself. Now it's pretty much the newer cars are harder to work on. My old V8s, I used to just slide under and easily change the oil.
Well, too many Philly cheesesteaks. Now you can't slide under.
Oh, no, I can fit.
Can you? Well, let me ask
I'm still in half decent shape. It's just the older cars, it seemed to be there's a lot more room to work.
Let me ask you this question, though. How can he do an oil change? Let's talk about this for a second. For $25, all right, and still afford to be there. Is he related? Is he a relative, or this is a business?
No, this is a business. He charges $28 for the basic, and if you want the works, I think it's if you want him to check everything, I think it's $28. I usually do that. But he actually lowered his price. His price was like $5 more each, and he said he got a better deal on bulk oil, so he gave the customers he gave the savings to the customers, and. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he makes a profit, but he's been there.
I hate to tell you how I think he's making a profit, but I would question it. you know, is he using
like
the right oil?
I've known him for like close to 30 years.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, as a bit.
That's,
you know, like I said, he does a great business, you know, because of, yeah, most places are charging $40, $45, I believe, for an oil change.
Well, maybe things are different in Philadelphia. I can tell you two bills I saw recently, one from Mahwah, New Jersey, and one from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 17 Ford Escape and a 14 Ford Escape. The oil changes at the dealer were $98 a piece and $103 a piece.
Oh my God!
I know.
Well, the dealers charge more. I know they have a higher labor cost, but my dealer actually, the last car I bought, I had free oil changes for life in my previous car.
Well, that's because you paid for it in the price of the car.
Yeah, but it was
right.
They charge you for the filter, so they charge you like $6 for an oil change. But they would try to sell you other things.
Well,
but,
of course,
you know,
that's
I would pay for a rotation. But still, it kept you in, and you know, it's still a good incentive. And you know, like I said, my father taught me when I was a kid. He says you do your maintenance, because if you don't, it's going to cost you.
Well, I agree with that. But let me ask you this question, and I'm going to let you go because we're running out of time. It's only
sure.
I only got 30 minutes left. What brand of oil is he using?
I know it's a synthetic blend, but I don't know the brand. I think it's, it may, you know, I don't know. You know what? I just know he uses a synthetic blend. I've never actually asked him
what
brand.
Right. And so let me say this, okay? Just let me say this and just noodle this, all right? A synthetic blend is a blend. Synthetic is a more superior oil. The cost of oil at a $30 oil change with a synthetic blend, I don't see how he's making any money. I don't see how he can afford to be there unless he owns the building and he's got an inheritance he's sitting on. He's collecting interest on T-bills. It doesn't make any sense. But I would look very carefully at the brand of oil, the type of oil, the viscosity of oil, and what filter, and go from there. I'm Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Back, Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's get on over and talk to Marty in New Orleans. Marty, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron. My 01 Sportage has a check engine light, which has come on, and it's a P0171 code that I got from the scan. And recently, last week, I cleaned the mass airflow sensor to see if it would help. Now, I understand that the light goes off after 50 miles, is what I've heard. But the light's still on, and I thought I'd ask you about it.
Okay. What makes you think it's the mass airflow sensor, Marty? Just out of
curiosity.
Well,
I've been wanting to do it anyway. It was a bunch of dirt up in there, but
okay.
I wasn't really expecting miracles
right.
with that.
Right. Okay. So it was a shot in the dark, is what you're telling me.
Well, it's something that I did, you know. That
and it's okay if it was. I just, you know, what led you to it is what my question is, you know.
Well, I've been thinking about it, and now that this came up with the lean situation, I just it inspired me to go ahead and do it anyway.
Okay.
But,
okay. So first of all,
I understand that.
I was going to say, first of all, I just want to point out that you're driving a 2001 Kia, right?
That's right.
That's what this is. Congratulations. You know, this car probably went the equivalent of to the moon and back. So,
wait, here comes the Mikeya. Yeah.
What's
wait.
A Mikeya? Mikeya!
Marty, did I ever tell you that I work with children? It just kind of happens. It's what I have to put up with. And I can still fix cars. I mean, that's the amazing part. So it's like working with the 13th grade over here sometimes. But was the Mikeya.
Yeah, it happens.
So it happens.
That's right.
Do you have access to a scan tool by chance?
No, I don't.
Okay. What these do, all right, P0171 is a lean fuel condition. All right.
Okay.
So let me see. How are we going to explain what a lean fuel condition is? What do you do for a living, Marty?
Well, I do maintenance work pretty much.
Okay. Like what, machinery and stuff? Trying to think.
Various things, electronics and, you know, machines, all kinds of different things.
All right. So you're technical. All right, I get it. So so zero is a balanced fuel mixture. All right? Do you remember high school geometry? Did you take geometry in high school? Remember when they taught you the positive and the negative numbers on that number line and you said, what do I need this for? And you didn't know. Well, here's what you need it for. So zero is a balanced fuel mixture. If we add a positive number to the number line, we're adding fuel to the base fuel trim of the engine. All right?
Okay.
So we're adding fuel above and beyond what the computer's programming normally calls for to compensate for something, either a condition that the engine is momentarily having occur to it, or a long-term condition, like there's a fault somewhere, an out-of-range or an out-of-bounds mass airflow sensor. All right? If fuel trim is starting to go negative, meaning it's below zero, we're pulling fuel away from the base fuel trim number because the engine is running richer than the computer expects it. And it's monitoring all this by looking at feedback from the O2 sensors or the air fuel ratio sensors, depending upon what everybody's car is equipped with. In your case, it's adding fuel. If we were to look at this with a scan tool, we would typically see a long and a short-term fuel trim number. Long-term is what happened over time. Short-term is what's happening now. So short-term would be lunch today. Long-term would be lunch yesterday and the day before that and the day before that and so on. Long-term is accumulative. Okay, it adds up over time. And this is true in 95% of the cars out there. When the fuel trim number exceeds 25% of base fuel, so if 0, 0, and we're plus or minus 5, 6%, 7%, that's okay. We get the plus 25%, bang, we get a P0171. We set a fault code. So knowing that is with a scan tool would help. All right. Looking at it on a scan tool would also help because in looking at short-term fuel trim. Is short-term fuel trim out of bounds at idle, but it gets better off idle? Or is it the other way around? And that tells me something, because if short-term fuel trim is bad at idle, I very likely have a vacuum leak. All right?
Right.
Off idle, the computer can compensate for that, and it'll hide it up to a degree. So keeping that in mind, what goes bad on the Kias, don't you guys do that again, I have to warn them, right? What goes bad on the Kias is I want you to look around the back of the intake manifold or on the side of the intake manifold. I just remember, 2001 wasn't exactly yesterday, but there is a manifold vacuum cap that rots and gets porous.
Ooh.
Okay? And it will cause a vacuum leak that's hard to detect and create this exact condition.
All right? Wow.
So, here's a case where, if you want to do something, spend $150, go buy a scan tool and learn how to read fuel trim because you're a technical guy and you'd really enjoy it. You would love to see the effects of it. All right. But I think what you're going to find with this is you're going to find a leaking vacuum cap or a cracked vacuum line around the back of the intake look at them carefully. The other thing you could try, all right, is those blue bottles of propane the hardware store always has?
Right.
Okay. Well, you can make yourself a propane enrichment kit. I don't know how deep into cars you want to get. I can take you as far as you want to go. There's a company out there, OTC. They sell something called a propane enrichment tool. It's under $75 if I remember right. If you Google it or Amazon it, propane enrichment tool, it's a controlled it's a controlled metered orifice that you can screw onto a propane bottle, all right, with a rubber hose on it. We actually used it for idle carburetor mixture adjustments on Chrysler Lean Burn back in 1976, which was a while ago. And what I do is to pinpoint or increase the pinpoint accuracy is I'll take a short piece of steel brake line, beat the end closed or just about closed. I peen it to a pinpoint. And now I've got a very accurate, very pinpoint way of shooting propane at various places. Mm-hmm. Now, if I was looking on a scan tool, I'd either look at O2 sensor voltage or I'd look at short-term fuel trim. But if I'm doing it without a scan tool, if I haven't convinced you to buy one yet, now I'm going to just kind of sniff around. I'm not going to spray it wildly. Think of spitting into, into various places around the engine. See if the RPM changes. You know, kind of waft it around the room a little bit, the engine bay, and see if the engine picks it up and if it changes the way it runs. And if it does, you're closing in on a vacuum line. Unfortunately, without a scan tool and the ability to measure the other side of seeing the result, you're kind of looking for a downed pilot in the ocean at night with a helicopter and no flashlight. It's just a little difficult, but it's easy to do if you want to buy some tools and you know, and then you can, you know, in another 5 years, you can register that car as a classic and come to Hot Rod Cruisins and stuff. You know, it'll be a classic Kia. So,
yeah, I'm sure that,
you know,
okay, so that's interesting to work on.
All right.
I wanted to ask you something. Have you ever been to the Pine Barrens? What do people think about the Jersey Devil up there?
Well, I think it's kind of a real thing. I've been through the Pine Barrens. It's a weird place, dude. It's definitely one of those things at 2 o'clock in the morning you don't want to be there. So, but yeah, I get it. Do they have something like that down Louisiana way?
Well, I'm sure the swamps do. I don't go there either.
Yeah, well, there you go. So maybe that's the way God intended it. You stay on your side of the line, and I'll stay on mine, and just leave me alone. So, but anyway, Marty, I appreciate the call, and I hope that helps.
Oh, of course it helped a lot, Ron. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, sir. You have a good rest of the day. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, Mikey, Tom, and the Jersey Devil. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. I'm feeling hot, hot, hot today. Tom, what is it with the bumper music today? Everything is hot. We know it's hot out, Tom. Why don't we get something like cool? Can we get like some Dairy Queen music?
Okay. Next week, we'll do Christmas in July just to make you happy.
That would be... I'd rather have the Mikeia. Can we go over and talk to... Nope, Mikey, get your hands off that button. Let's go over and talk to Patrick in Gainesville, Florida. Patrick, help me. How can I help you today? What's going on?
Hey, Ron, I've got a 2010 F-150 5.4 flex engine.
Right.
It's manufactured 1010. They all, for some reason, my parts never come in right, so I have to tell them it was manufactured 1010. Okay, I got 170,000 miles on it. I've had it for, you know, like I had it with 10 miles on it, and now it's got 170. It's been a great truck. But my problem is I'm getting a P0345
right
on my scan tool, and it says the sensor A bank 2. What I did was I went ahead and replaced both of them because I said I'm not going to take a chance. I'll just go ahead and replace both of them and crank the truck back up, and it still sounds, when I crank it up, it sounds like a diesel.
Right, because it's like timing is late, right? It sounds like it's, or it sounds like it's, you put low grade gas and it's knocking going uphill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I put two new ones in there. They only had one like high dollar one, and then they had a mid dollar one, and so I just went ahead and got, you know, the one, put it in, and put the other one on the other side. And so I pulled them back off because it was doing it again. So I pulled it off, and I metered it, and they both were, you know, both were working that I could tell. And then I did what you say. I went and started moving the wires around, and then I started looking for air leaks, and it just doesn't do it all the time. It just does it a little bit, and then all of a sudden, boom, it does it again, and then it doesn't do it. I went all the way down to Orlando and came back, and it didn't do anything. And then when I stopped, it did it again.
Right.
So I thought maybe – I started kind of looking at it, and I said, well, somebody told me, well, it might be a camshaft phaser.
Right.
But then I looked – Yeah, I looked up that, and that sounds more like a tick-in, not like what
well,
you just explained.
So let's talk about bicycles, right? You've seen a bicycle, right? Big sprocket.
Yeah, yeah.
Big sprocket, little sprocket. Okay?
Yeah.
And for years, bicycles were all the same. Big sprocket, little sprocket, big sprocket, little sprocket. The pedals were always in the same position, right? Everything was relative to itself. And,
right.
you know, if you put a red dot on the big sprocket and a red dot on the little sprocket, you know, and they lined up, they would line up again, right? Because they went around at the same rate and speed. And all things considered, your timing marks always lined up, right? Well,
right.
Now the bicycle manufacturer invented this new thing, and they call it a phaser. And what they do is, while you're pushing the pedal around, they allow the big sprocket to advance and come around the top sooner than it did before, so it gives you a little extra burst of power, right?
Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
that's sort of how a cam phaser works, if you want to think of it in that sense. So the reason you're getting this fault code is, and again, a computer is only as smart as its programming. It's interpreting that it's expecting to see top dead center and doesn't, all right?
Uh-huh.
Or it's expecting to see cam retard. Whatever position it's expecting, it doesn't see. So now it says, hey, there's a fault with the sensor. It can't physically check to see, do I have an actuator that's stuck, or I'm sorry, a phaser that's stuck, or do I have a timing chain that's got a little bit of stretch in it at 170,000 miles? So, you know, it starts throwing sensor faults, when in reality, it's probably more mechanical, all right?
Okay.
From my seat here, the majority of the time, I find this to be chains and the cam phaser, the piece on the sprocket that advances the timing and you know, changes how it comes up the top. Now, you could go through the pain of pulling the front timing covers off and, you know, lining up your marks and but you know, only do that if your intention is to do the chains. So
or just throw the truck out, because I have no idea how to do that.
Right.
So I'm not going to do that.
Or you're going to bite the bullet and you're going to go talk to your local dealer or a repair shop.
Sure.
And say, hey, listen, this is where I think we're going. And this would be a good example of, you know, trying to get somebody's expertise out of them and see what can they do. Where do you think this is going to be? I can tell you from what I'm hearing, New Jersey dollars. New Jersey dollars, I think that repair is somewhere around $4,000 by the time you do chains, actuators, phasers, a couple of gaskets, some seals, and so on. The one thing you want to think about is, in Florida, I bet you there's not a lot of rust on this truck. What kind of shape is the rest of the truck in? Does it pay? And I'm saying this, you know, now you got to go out and be a little Columbo here. You got to go out and, you know, does it pay to just dump a motor in it? And if a motor's, because here's the bottom line, and then I'm going to run. If a motor is $6,000 and a new truck is 40, okay, and you really need a pickup truck for whatever you're doing to get by in life or to run your business, guess what? $6,000's cheaper than 40. $6,000's cheaper than 50. It's you know, and then it becomes an accountant question. Can you afford it? Do you need it? Can you write it off? Is it a legitimate business expense? And all those things you got to go and research in Colombo. But up to that point, you know, I would stop worrying about sensors. I think you got chain issues, and you got to dig a little deeper in that direction. Appreciate the call, Patrick. Good luck to you, and let us know what happens. I'm Ron Anning, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the Name of the Car Doctor. Wow, quick 2 hours today. Quick hour for sure this past hour. More information about this radio show at cardoctorshow.com. Keep in mind, if you're new to us, such as the folks down there, WNIS, Norfolk, Virginia, we thank you for carrying the show, and thanks for being part of the Car Doctor family. Welcome aboard. You can call 855-560-9900, 855-560-9900. Now, when the show is over even, leave a message. Executive producer Tom Ray will call you back and get you in the queue for the next live broadcast. We are live on the network Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. East Coast time. And you can call us wherever you are, whether you're podcasting or listening in an affiliate market that doesn't take the show live. You can call live and during live show hours, Saturdays 2 to 4, and we'll talk to you about your car. It's that simple. It's we got no bones to pick. We're just here to help you fix cars, which is what I do during the week. I had I want to tell you this story real quick. I had an 03 Toyota Camry this week that came in, and the customer's complaint was that the blower motor sounded funny. Well, when I took the blower motor apart, you know, a blower motor, the wheel is probably 4 inches deep. It was packed 4 inches deep with acorns and debris and grass. And, you know, a mouse had gotten in there and made a nest. And it overloaded the cabin filter, packed the blower motor with all these acorns and debris and all this other nonsense, put so much weight on the recirculating door, it actually broke it. It actually broke the hinges on the recirculating door. Thank God for JB Weld, right? JBWeld.com. Got out my JB Weld epoxy and my JB Weld. They make like a type of resin that will actually strengthen and fill gaps. And I actually made a blend door hinge out of JB Weld, put the car together, and it's fixed done down the road. So it's amazing what critters can do. Till the next time, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.